Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us wherever you're listening, throughout Southern California or worldwide on the KPCC app or streaming on kpcc.org. And we remind you, of course, during this time when you might be home much more than typically, just tell your smart speaker to play KPCC, and we're here for you 24 hours a day. Later this hour, we'll take a look at the U.S. Supreme Court term, which just began yesterday. Some significant cases, including one on the future of the Affordable Care Act. And we'll also talk about what have been dubbed ghost kitchens. They actually began operation before the era of the pandemic, but have taken off since. They use a variety of different restaurant names, but work out of common kitchens, delivering throughout Southern California. We'll talk about how ghost kitchens work later this hour. But we begin with the latest on President Trump, who was released from the hospital yesterday at 3:30 our time. The president returning to the White House, where he walked out onto the White House balcony and said this.
Don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it. You're going to beat it. We have the best medical equipment. We have the best medicines, all developed recently. And you're going to beat it. I went, I didn't feel so good. And 2 days ago, I could have left 2 days ago. 2 days ago, I felt great, like better than I have in a long time. I said just recently, better than 20 years ago. Don't let it dominate. Don't let it take over your lives.
Now, you hear, though, a bit of the effect in the president's voice of COVID-19 on him. We just had a moment ago. White House doctors said President Trump reports no symptoms of COVID-19 as he continues recovery at the White House. And let me clarify, that's the White House physician saying what the president reports. That's not the physician himself saying what the symptoms are that the president has or doesn't have. With us is senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk at NPR, Ron Elving. Ron, good to have you with us again.
Be with you, Larry.
So we still have seemingly a lack of clarity about the president's condition. Yesterday, we clearly heard the effect on his breathing, even though he talked about feeling the best in 20 years. So what are we hearing from people inside the White House, what they're observing?
Very little, because the people inside the White House are ceding to the president himself, as is his personal physician, Sean Conley, who made it very clear today that he said the president said he was feeling no symptoms. So he is reporting what the president reports to him. And the doctor seems to be putting a little bit of distance between himself and that judgment. I think we could all hear, as you pointed out, and if you watch the videotape that the president was so eager to have made, that he staged the walk up on those stairs to the White House to the Truman balcony twice, if you watch that carefully, I think people should watch his neck and watch how he is breathing and say whether or not, in their judgment, the president is breathing normally and breathing the way they have always seen him breathe and sounding the way they've always heard him sound. But he says he's doing great.
And what do we know about any additional cases of COVID-19 within the White House or top levels of government?
Well, we do know that the president and his wife and his campaign manager and his press secretary and his former spokesperson, Kellyanne Conway, and the chairman of the Republican National Committee and a number of other people inside the White House had been declared positive by yesterday. And there were more tests going on, and there has not been much information coming from who else might have tested positive. We haven't heard more about negative tests except the one that I believe you already mentioned about Vice President Pence being found to be free of coronavirus at this time. So he is cleared to go ahead to Utah for his debate with Kamala Harris.
And apparently there'll be an addition of plexiglass separating the debaters Wednesday night in Salt Lake for that single vice presidential candidates debate. President Trump also tweeting that he intends to be at the presidential debate, which is coming up with that next week, Ron. It's coming up within a pretty tight time frame to his hospitalization.
That's right. There are two more debates, both on Thursday nights, the 15th and the 22nd of October. So, yeah, that's coming up pretty soon. It's just next week. And the president says he'll be ready. I have no doubt but that he will consider himself ready. And they will probably have to take some extra precautions there, too. You know, at the debate last week, the president came late and was not there in time for the testing protocol. And they had to make a judgment call as to whether to go forward with the debate at all, because there had been an agreement that both candidates would be tested before the debate. They decided to go ahead out of deference to the president and the shortness of time. And, of course, the tyranny of time, as everyone was tuning in a particular moment all around the country. So they went ahead with it. But the president had not been tested. And for all we know now, he might have been positive at that time, at the time of the Tuesday night debate.
We, of course, have Joe Biden continuing to test on a regular basis. He and his wife, Jill, testing negative for COVID-19. Ron, do we know anything about to what degree the president is sequestering himself inside the White House and avoiding any sort of meetings with people in person?
We are told that the president was going to self-quarantine in the residence. But, of course, he is on the phone. He is on Twitter. He is making remarks. And his communications director, who has stepped into the breach here with the absence of Kayleigh McEnany, his press secretary, who has tested positive, Alyssa Farah, who has not really been a household name up to now, is stepping into the breach a little bit and speaking for the president. But she said that as of right now, this is just in the last hour, she would expect the president would be seen and heard from today, not just on Twitter, but that he would be out there, as she put it, and that would be his call, and he would do it when he chose to do so. I think after what we saw last night and the little tour he took by Limo one of the nights that he was supposedly in the hospital, I think we can say the president is quite eager to be heard and seen. So we expect we will probably see him again today.
I don't know if you saw, Ron, you probably did a couple of hours ago, that Facebook removed a post by President Trump in which he claimed the flu, seasonal flu, is deadlier than the novel coronavirus. I think Twitter has labeled the tweet as inaccurate. Anything to add on that report?
Just that the rates of mortality are from 5 times greater to 10 times greater for coronavirus. Far, far more people get the flu every year, and very, very few people die of it, although there are thousands who do, but not 210,000. And far, far more people get the seasonal flu. So the mortality rate is far, far greater for coronavirus. And the president actually knew that and told Bob Woodward that back in February. He even had the number right. He said it's 5 times worse than the worst of the seasonal flus. And that is correct. It's sometimes even worse than that compared with certain flus in some populations. So the president had the proper information in February, and what he put out today that was blocked by Facebook and which was contradicted by Twitter, which did allow the tweet to remain up but labeled it misinformation, is simply wrong and contradicts what the president himself said on tape to Bob Woodward in February.
We're going to be talking in a moment with our frequent Air Talk medical expert, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner of Huntington Hospital, to get her thoughts on this. But, Ron, obviously most important thing is that all the people who are COVID-19 positive recover and recover thoroughly. But we do need to talk politics as well. And are there fears within the president's team looking at the falling polling numbers coming out of the first presidential debate? This was even before the president announced that he was COVID-19 positive, looking at the president and the symptoms that he's exhibiting at this point. Is there deep concern within the White House about the political implications of this?
Yes, of course. That is a secondary concern. The health of the president, the survival of the president is obviously paramount, both for the country and for all the people who work for him. But there is this next, and it isn't terribly far away, concern about an election that's 4 weeks from today. And the president, his position has deteriorated somewhat in the polls since the debate a week ago. So they obviously have to have that in the back of their minds. And clearly the president is looking at that as well. And that could have something something to do with why he was so bound and determined not to remain in the hospital and seem to be in some sense or another felled by this disease. He needed to show he was very much standing tall and, in his mind at least, defying the virus.
Ron, as always, thank you so much. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to your coverage tomorrow night on the vice presidential candidates debate, which we'll carry live at 6 right here on KPCC.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Ron Elving of NPR, senior editor and correspondent. Again, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, we have live NPR coverage of the vice presidential candidates debate from Salt Lake City. Kamala Harris and Mike Pence will be debating, and we'll have NPR analysis following it. Joining us now, as I mentioned previously, infectious disease specialist at Pasadena's Huntington Hospital, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner. Dr. Schreiner, thank you for being with us. Your response, first of all, to the president saying that we should not fear COVID-19 and we should not let it control us.
Well, I think that's just really incorrect information, Larry, because it's, first of all, I think that the family members of the 210,000 people who have died from this disease in the United States would have a different opinion about that. And as a physician who takes care of patients with coronavirus, this is a very aggressive virus that can do a great deal of damage to people, not only can certainly kill them, but make them very sick, requiring hospitalization. And we are beginning to recognize that there does appear to be some type of post-COVID syndrome, the so-called long haulers, where there's a lot of residual medical issues that may preclude them from being able to work and to have some ongoing, certainly cardiopulmonary manifestations that can be quite serious. So this is a very, very different virus than the flu. It is not something to take lightly. It has, you know, killed over 1 million people around the world. It's a very aggressive and infectious virus, and that's really what the truth is.
Well, and you can say don't let it control your life. Nonetheless, the precautions for COVID-19 affect virtually every aspect of our life, from where we go to covering our faces to, you know, washing our hands. I mean, it's so thoroughgoing to me, the way in which COVID-19 has affected our lives. Kind of hard to overstate that.
That's right, Larry. And I think the issue is that unfortunately right now, in the absence of effective therapy, which we really do not have very good therapy in spite of what's being advertised, and the absence of a vaccine, those are the only things that we can do. And yes, they're very disruptive in your life, that you can't be with your loved ones on holidays, or that you can't be close to them. You can't touch people. You can't hug people. We're all having to wear masks. We're all having to practice social distancing. Those are very disruptive things. They are necessary to prevent this virus from really ravaging the entire globe. And in the absence of doing those things, you can see what happened. And I think that's very clear what happened in the White House with the spread of the virus because of the lack of use of masks. The virus doesn't care whether you're the president of the United States or a doctor or a wealthy person or a poor person. It's all related to the fact the virus just is looking for a non-immune host.
We're talking with Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, Huntington Hospital in Pasadena, infectious disease specialist, joining us on Air Talk. The president, according to his personal physician, self-reporting that he does not have symptoms. Yesterday, it did appear that his breathing was somewhat of an issue, and though he was able to stand, he certainly looked to be dealing with the effects of COVID-19. What did you observe?
Well, I made that observation as well. I mean, he had walked up some stairs and he had a mask on, but when he took the mask off, he definitely was, Mr. Elving was commenting on was what are called sort of sternocleidomastoid retractions, where you could see in his neck he was really trying to take deep breaths. And that's very typical of viral pneumonia causing problems like that. So I do think that he is still symptomatic. And remember that he's really kind of in the danger period right now. We know that the virus, when you first contract it, your symptoms may be relatively mild. But in people that have comorbidities, which the president certainly has, as the disease moves through the second week, that's when some of the more serious complications can happen. He did receive some novel therapy that most of us don't have access to, the monoclonal antibody therapy, very early that may have helped slow down that process or hopefully curtailed that process. And he also received corticosteroids, which are anti-inflammatory medications that help decrease the inflammation. Now, and remdesivir, the antiviral, which doesn't really have too much activity generally in most people. It kind of shortens their hospitalization. But none of those medications are game changers that we know of. The monoclonal antibodies are still in trial. We don't know all of the benefits and risks of those therapies. But he certainly had access to all of them, and that may be impacting his disease, but I would say he's still probably pretty symptomatic.
We've had a couple of listeners who posted on our AirTalk page about the effect of steroids and how it can give a sense of strength, and it can have a kind of a psychological and physical effect for people feeling much better. Can you speak to that and how COVID-19 patients can be affected by being treated with a corticosteroid?
So to clarify, the study that most of the use of dexamethasone is being based on was done in the United Kingdom in England, and it showed in critically ill patients, in patients that were on ventilators, that it did show a significant benefit for those patients. It has not been well studied in people with early disease or who are not in critical condition. And so the use of corticosteroids still, when we use them, is still unclear. There may be some deleterious effects using the corticosteroids too early in the disease, because what happens with COVID is that it stimulates the immune system. You have what appears to be initially an appropriate immune reaction when you encounter the virus. And then in some people, not in all people, but in some people, it can sort of cause the immune system to go haywire and to overreact. And that's when the corticosteroids may be of the most utility. Using them early is not clear whether it's helpful. Now, I will say that we do that in many of our patients at the hospital, because in the grand scheme of things, dexamethasone isn't a terribly dangerous medication. But there may be some side effects in using it too early in suppressing the initial response. And you're absolutely right. Steroids really kind of ramp you up. They make you feel, pretty good. Sometimes people can get a little bit, have mental status changes with them as well, but they certainly can make you feel stronger and can give you kind of a false sense of security, only to crash again a few days later.
Glenna writes on the AirTalk page, how confident are we that the unique care the president got with his team of specialists and access to even experimental treatments has helped him more than the average COVID-19 patient?
Well, time will tell. And the problem is, this is an N of one. We don't know, how he's responding. There isn't a lot of clarity in terms of his objective data. What did his CT scan look like? What were his oxygenation levels? There's something we measure called inflammatory markers. We don't have any information about those. And it's hard to make any judgments about using these therapies in one patient. Were they appropriate to use? They certainly are available. He got them all at a very early stage, which probably earlier than most of us would give them to our patients. We know that remdesivir, again, is not a game changer. It does interrupt viral replication, but it only shortens the hospitalization. Dexamethasone, we've discussed. Monoclonal antibodies, we just don't know yet whether they're going to be of significant benefit, but they appear to be promising. But whether they're the game changers, I think it's still unclear.
Doctor, do you have an opinion about the president's personal physician quoting the president on his condition? We understand that with HIPAA restrictions that even the president's physician can't necessarily come out and talk about what he observes. But your thoughts about him saying, quoting what the president says about himself?
Well, I think he's in a very difficult position for a couple of reasons. One, you're dealing with the president of the United States. The second is that the president of the United States in this situation is his commander-in-chief, because this physician is in the Navy, I believe. And so he has to abide by what the commander-in-chief says. And so it's a kind of an unusual spot for a doctor. It's very difficult. We all have patients that want to guide their therapy, and ultimately patients can decide their therapy. The only other issue here, well, a very big issue, is that this person, Donald Trump, is probably still infectious. And I would hope that they're practicing really, really good social isolation in the White House, because he poses a risk to anybody who's around him, in terms of his infectivity. So I think this physician is in a very difficult place, and he's trying to kind of navigate some very tricky situations and be transparent as much as he can be, but also be deferential to his commander-in-chief, who is Donald Trump.
Dr. Schreiner, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Continue to be well, and we appreciate your joining us.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, infectious disease specialist at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena, one of our all-star crew of medical experts who join us on a frequent basis with the latest on COVID-19. Our focus today, of course, on President Trump's illness and his return to the White House. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Coming up, it's the brand new term of the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll talk about the major cases the court will hear in just 1 minute.